to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the new microphone who dis head.
Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, and running role-playing games. Oh, it hurts. What is this?
I'm the... Hello.
It's another head.
I'm Enzo. Tried to crack my drink, but it wasn't very loud head, so that was
what I was... Because it's not a beer, it doesn't count.
Yeah.
Well,
got nothing to say to that, so.
Well, you gotta say stuff, you're on a podcast. Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. And we've brought Enzo on this time. This episode, this one, because we got something to talk about that kind of came from him. Do you maybe want to give us a quick little? I mean, we're gonna get more into it, but do you want to tee it up?
I could try, but and so I will.
I appreciate it.
Coming in to talk today about lore and canon in RPG settings and. As the GM, when to use lore from a setting that you either want to play or just developing your own, and you know the issues that can come from that, or problems, hang-ups, or I don't know. There's a lot that we'll get into, I suppose, about it.
Okay. Well, yeah.
I wasn't really listening. Did you do a good job?
He did an okay job. We're going to talk more about it. That's the point, you know.
Well, because you brought the idea to us, we haven't had a guest star in a long time.
Oh, well.
Sometimes we okay. like to do this with, you know, not just ourselves. So, let's go through this outline real quick. So we're going to talk about the idea of lore and canon and lore versus canon. We're going to define some stuff. We're going to talk about Enzo's dilemma that he had when he was running and why we're talking about this in the first place in some more detail. We're going to go over some examples, and we're going to talk about when things like this are helpful and when they are a hindrance. So,
lore and canon.
Yeah, lore versus.
What is the difference? Because I don't know.
Well, you're supposed to know.
Stupid.
Boom, it was on the outline, he walked right into it.
You know I can't read.
Well,
alright, so we don't know if there is technically a difference, but we will define a difference because that's what we do here.
And I'm sure there's internet sweats who might, you know, dispute which one we say is which and how we choose to define it. We're defining it in a way now as it applies to our experience.
Yeah. So, when a game world or fictional setting has established things about it that are true, like history, that is lore. That's what we call lore. It's historical.
Yeah. It's basically impossible for there to not be any lore in a fictional setting.
Because every world has history.
Yeah. Has things like, you know... Well, yeah. And lore is meant to be info that helps players immerse themselves. It's meant to be engaging. You're meant to engage with it. Things about the world that are true, unique about its fiction, whatever, that's there so that you can, you know stuff about the setting that you're playing in. Right. And
there's three different races, humans, elves, dwarves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are they different and they come from, like, different gods, maybe, or something like that. That's all lore that characters can engage with if they want to.
Yeah. So, general lore stuff. Dane mentioned historical, usually. It's often things that happened in the past. A lot of canonical stuff is past, too, but we'll get into that. So, general lore, geography, what does a map look like? The creation myth. And that might sound like a weird one. You might not want to get into like Silmarillion level you know, mythology for your world. But, like, we all just watched the Fallout show. The bombs dropping is sort of, like, the creation story of... That's the beginning of the Fallout.
Lore.
Yeah. Like, the world wouldn't be the way it was unless this thing happened that made the world. So, things like the tech level, what the magic system is, existing species, Dane mentioned. Outcomes. The outcomes of those events. I forgot the end of that bullet point. And then as opposed to... So that's like generally speaking lore stuff as opposed to canon, which is like the acts of individuals, famous characters, notable, you know, groups of characters, factions. Events with, you know, more detailed description than like, you know, this god made this people in the distant, you know, mythical past.
Right, so if you think of lore as like your history, canon is like your specifics of that history. So like the Fallout bomb example one, right? The lore is the bombs dropped.
Yeah.
Now, is it canon? Oh, that's a big spoiler. Let me back that one right.
Maybe
the fuck
not do
off
that
the
one.
Ledge. Let me let me start again. So the second age of Lord of the Rings, of Middle Earth, the second age happened. We all know that happened, right? Now was like, God, what's wrong with me? Cate Blanchett plays Galadriel. Is Galadriel running around with like a sexy like elf guy? And, like, you know, fighting orcs like that. And then, like, you know, did it go down like that? I don't know. That's like, where the canon specifics come in.
Yeah.
Like,
we know
those events happened.
Yeah, the broad strokes events of the Second Age. Sauron coming to power. Stuff like that. Lore. And then, you know, you split hairs over whether or not the events of Rings of Power is canonical to... You know, Tolkien's universe, shit like that. But
so it's,
whether or not those things are canonical, they occur during the Second Age, which is established, you know, lore. It's a little confusing,
You can have
we're
both.
Making a distinction.
You can engage with both. Both can be helpful and both can be hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to be talking specifically further on down this episode, so we wanted to define our terms that... When we say lore, it's like historical overview, very zoomed out perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Canon is like very specific, like very detailed.
Yeah, and things about lore, another thing, we didn't use this word, but you could maybe call some lore stuff, you could call it static, like where the mountains are, stuff like that, you know?
Perfect.
That stuff's not dynamic. It's not going to change unless there's like some cataclysm that does change the mountains. That'd be a big deal. But that would also be a lore thing in the past, like why the mountains are broken or whatever in your universe. Lore is sort of a static thing, largely relegated to the past, or just like statically, this is the way things are now. There are these species in the universe.
Canon is dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I like that distinction. We should have put that in our outline.
We should have, but. You know, we'd had some beers.
Yeah. All right, Enzo.
Yeah. So tell us a story. Tell us a little bit about when you were a dungeon master.
I remember it so fucking well. Oh, you can't curse on this show.
Well, we just got demonetized from YouTube.
Yeah, but it's fine.
Fuck. I mean. Shit. A couple years ago, giving the two headed GMs a break, to allow them both to play, because normally at least one of them is playing, and always one of them is our typical, you know, GM in our normal friend group. And I offered to run an adventure for our group a couple years ago. And my process for deciding what we were going to play took... this is where this episode is coming from. Because I wanted to run D&D 5e. and I was planning to use the Forgotten Realms setting as, you know, what where we were gonna be. But before I even got to that point, I was also kicking around the idea of like making up an entirely new setting and world and trying to decide what system would be most fun as well as like, you know, fit into the setting without doing too much work on my end, because for anyone who hasn't GM'd, it takes a lot to, you know, takes a lot of work on for your players to develop and make adventures. So I settled on Forgotten Realms and D&D because it is an established world and setting, and it had everything that I wanted to include in an adventure already. Namely, you know, multiple races, different classes. Although our group doesn't play 5e a lot, I enjoy the, you know, the system overall. I think... And it was different than what we had been doing in our group, so it was, I thought, a fun little change up for everyone to get into something new. So, but what I ran into...
But then it all went wrong.
I thought it went great.
Yeah, it actually. Did.
It went fine.
I had a good time.
I decided to do a few things different in the session. Everyone, all the players started at, you know, level 3, whatever their class was, to kind of skip the initial... just grind that sometimes happens of just wanting to level up. But then I also, this is getting away from the, we don't have to get
talk
too much
more about creating your adventure. Yeah.
So I wanted to do a fire themed, for those of you who don't know at all, and because I don't know if it's ever been brought up, I work as a wildland firefighter for the Forest Service, and at the time, I was feeling an itch to play or to run an adventure that, like, was heavily...
Something to do with that.
Was influenced from my time working as a wildland firefighter in the woods, so I wanted it to include a lot of fire. And, you know, fun things that, like, I've experienced just, like, in the woods that are, you know, naturally occurring, but also could be interesting if they got... magicized and, you know, boosted or put into a fantasy setting. So
there's a lot of things to work with in 5e and the Forgotten Realms, right? You know, there's a big old monster manual. There's lots of
there's so much
book
actual like writing that, you know, Wizards of the Coast have. No, that's correct, right?
Yeah, Wizards.
Yeah.
Wizards.
Yeah. That have put out, there's several monster manuals, there's several different settings that all kind of, you know, it's interplanet, you know, dimensional almost, where everything's connected.
Would you say it's a fire hose of information?
I mean, he didn't.
Would you sign could off say on that. That? Yes. You could drown in the amount of words if they were...
High volume, high pressure amount of...
And they were like just straight
to,
into your face.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll sign off on that.
And so there was stuff that like automatically kind of fell in with what you were talking. There's like, you know, there's fire magic. You can build fire focused magic characters. There's fire. There's enemies, creatures made out of fire. You know, the djinns and the genasi.
Which is what
there's
the,
things from the plane of fire.
Which is
that,
what
you know,
the campaign ended up being was you know, monsters from the, you know, plane of fire in 5e were the main protagonists, sort of like a cult thing. But the into the lore and the canon of developing the campaign, Forgotten Realms was the lore, right? Mm-hmm. So I put the players in Baldur's Gate, which is a very well-established historical city in that world.
Yeah.
Very, very heavy lore as far as just so much information is out there. There's, you know, there's three game, or what is there? There's Baldur's Gate the first one, Baldur's Gate second. Baldur's Gate 3, Neverwinter. I don't know.
Sure, there's more.
There's a lot.
There's some we're forgetting.
But so there's a lot of information out there about, you know, Forgotten Realms and all the places that just exist in that setting.
Hmm.
For the campaign, it was, as a relatively younger GM, new in experience, it took me a lot of work to kind of fit what I wanted the campaign to be while using that established lore in the setting.
What would you say your greatest challenge of, so you had a pretty good idea of what you wanted to run. What was your greatest challenge fitting that into Forgotten Realms?
The biggest challenge was for me, because I had been consuming so much of the, you know, historical established lore, we kind of, the static lore, as we coined earlier. The hard part was fitting or creating the specific canon for the adventure and fitting it into what was already there that would have been more work to like take out, I suppose, while also staying, I guess, using 5e using Forgotten Realms as the setting and it having so much in there already, and us creating our own little adventure through it with specific things that I put in, like, you know, homebrew style that didn't exist before in the game. That was a challenge to like make it not only like fit for the campaign, but then fit in what the world was, I suppose. And that was fun, but yeah, at times it was a little annoying.
Mm-hmm. Did the difficulty come from being able to find like information on, because for me, when I like look up something in the Forgotten Realms, I always just like get frustrated because like the wiki never says anything like really specific or like really helpful. It's all like, you know, in a book that I would have to pay for. They're like, oh, this is in like the Sword Coast book. I'm like, I'm not paying $50 to look up one thing.
Yeah, I ran into that a few times, especially wanting to take the players to an interesting, you know, lore, historical, static location or castle or something, and having to kind of make up myself what was in it because, yeah, I didn't have all the information available. That was a little frustrating, just in the sense of, yeah, I didn't want to pay for one tidbit of, you know, world building for the campaign. But it was also, I think, it's also kind of a good thing because it allowed me as the GM to, you know, the freedom to just make up whatever, because it's still like, it was still my campaign and it was still made for the players to have fun. So I still took the liberty and, you know, I was God for a while, so like, you know what? Yeah, we're going to this place, but here's what it's like.
Which thing did you feel more, I guess, that like, that there was a bunch of stuff pre-established, so a ton of the work was done for you. Specifics, you know, maybe not always available to you, whatever. But was that like more helpful to have that foundation, or was it more of a hindering thing to have all of those things that are like established true about this D&D setting when you were putting it together? And then a second part of that question is, when we were actually playing, did things that were true about the Forbidden Lands, did they help you set up adventures and help you, you know, like, as like go-to resources when we had questions as players, or when you were setting stuff up or taking us to certain places? Or was it more of a hindrance that you had to obey what was already there?
So the first part, what your question was,
when you were setting it up,
when I was setting it up, I thought it was helpful, especially since I didn't want to make my entire own world and
yeah.
setting and history and all that that goes into world building.
Okay. So having like good static lore.
Having static lore was helpful because it let me like just pick a location, you know, for the campaign, and then locations outside of that one, like for adventuring purposes. Oh, it's like, yes, there is, you know, a tower over here.
Yeah.
And here's what people say about it.
Right.
And that was, that made it easy because it also just created, you know, natural moments to, as the GM, to, you know, give the players lore of the world so that they start to, you know, build their own, you know, their own personal, because I don't know how much everyone was doing on their own as far as, you know, were they reading any of the books besides, like, just, you know, player creation, or were they going on Wiki to, like, look up stuff? I don't know.
Okay.
Were they running a secret
Discord? Were they running a secret behind the back using their characters that I didn't know about for a while? Maybe. I don't know.
We were.
Turns out they were. The second part... was it a hindrance?
Well, when we actually did adventures, like, you know, when we were actually on the grid doing stuff, or, you know, like interacting with characters or factions in the city or outside of the city, was having some of that stuff pre-established, was that also cool? But now we're interacting with it, or was it? Did it?
I don't think, at least, it never seemed like a major hang-up while we were actually, you know, you as players were actually doing quests or adventures or anything. It always seemed to work out pretty well because I think I also, despite myself, like, reading a lot and, like, getting into a specific location, I think I would present it to you, the players, in a way that wasn't over... the top. I'd give you enough to be like, yes, this is a cool, interesting place, here's some little tidbits about it, but it's not, normally it didn't lead like down a rabbit hole of like, oh well, we were doing this, but now there's a cool, like, you know, underground part of the city to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so didn't happen too much, I don't think.
Did you purposely like pull back on that stuff, like knowing that, like, oh, we might know that under the library there's like these old catacombs. I don't know if there is, but I'm just using that.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah.
Did knowing that a lot of that stuff was like out in the open for us as players to read and like know about, did that change the way you structured adventures at all?
Not for me too much, because the way the campaign was also designed, I think, led to... it didn't allow the players too much just, like, moments or time to just go off on a random thing. I think it was pretty well...
yeah, we were pretty focused.
The players were pretty focused, and the quests were, for the most part, pretty focused. So even in locations where there was, like, you know, you're in a castle... where I think that was one of them, going to, you know, a specific library in the Forgotten Realms that is established as a, you know, static lore place with a very deep and, like, probably many places to look up all the things that happen in it. But you guys were just on the surface, really, so just that lore was there, and I guess I think I gave some of it away, like, not away, but, like, hinted at it, but it wasn't ever meant to, like, oh, well, now you can just, like, go spend the rest of the, you know, campaign here. It was like, yeah, this is just a really interesting place, I think. As a DM, or as a GM, it was like, oh, this is a cool location. And it tied well enough, and it was able to be tied well enough into the campaign to, I think, justify, like, you know, you guys going there. But also didn't give too much just, you know, freedom to the players to like just like wander away, and made it clear all, if I needed to, that like, yeah, you could maybe fight them, but it won't turn out good. I think I did it pretty well in that sense. So I never felt it was too much, like, there. I don't think there was ever too much lore in the setting that took away from, you know, the campaign that I wanted to run.
Okay.
I think I was able to flow it them pretty seamlessly while staying true to both, like, you know, what I wanted in the campaign, as well as, you know, the Dungeons & Dragons, like, 5e experience in specifically the Forgotten Realms setting, so.
All right. Let's wrap up this little section then. Was there anything about using D&D that was hindering or inconvenient to engage with as you did your stuff?
Well, more than what he bore, you already said some things.
You said a few things.
Maybe summarize.
Summarize. I guess where it wasn't helpful. You've mostly talked about how it was fine. Or how you were able to use it.
Sure, and that's, I think that's the overall experience, is it was the using Forgotten Realms in 5e did not take away from running a campaign that was still just interesting to myself as the GM, and hopefully made it interesting to the players. Mm. The times where I think using specifically the 5e mechanics and just structure took away a little bit was the way I made it, which was using or capping the players at a specific level, which just had to lead me to curate fights to make them hard and difficult, but also, you know, using, well, just because you guys didn't get new skills or anything, so I had to be just balanced at that kind of type. The other stuff I think was more just like the specifics of the world when it like came to, you know, money or
stocks
at one moment, and
we've like, talked about that.
I think use it or having at times like the bigger world of 5e at moments, I think did, you know, start to crash down. Like, oh, it's like, hey, this is a cool tower. The biggest, baddest monster lives there, actually. So maybe let's not go there. But I did tell you about it. So
yeah,
like, now
he's technically there.
Yeah, you put it on the map, and we expressed interest in checking it out.
Yeah, and so it's like, oh, all right, well. So I think there's moments where, it, like, you know, having just such a large world.
Okay.
And learning so much about it just in the process of, like, you know, researching for adventures, it led me down holes and, you know, little rabbit holes of, like, oh, this is really cool.
But we didn't engage with, like, you know, Driz Duarden or, you know, any, like, characters from the novels or anything. So at no point was there, like, a conflict between what we were doing and...
No. We,
you know, like the canon of a novel,
right?
Everything in the D&D setting, or like a Baldur's Gate game.
Yeah, everything that happened through that campaign, the Black Ash Company campaign, was all within Forgotten Realms. But that everything that you guys did was basically all, you know, dynamic canon.
Yeah,
specific canon of, you know, something that, you know, could exist in the world. And did in our setting, and, you know, someone else could use it if they got a hold of all my notes, but.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, shall we move on to talk about some other?
Well, yeah, so we talked mainly about Forgotten Realms so far.
Yeah.
But we want to hit a couple other things. So just examples of why this episode that we're doing would come in handy, because you have things like the flagship, you know, D&D thing, right? Forgotten Realms. There's shitloads of lore, and historical events and like novels that make things, you know, canon and all this crap, right? So that one's kind of just like both. It's got a lot of lore, it's got a lot of canon, mm-hmm. right? Then there's like your licensed products that like are really about engaging with like the canon.
Yeah.
Right? Like your Lord of the Rings, your Marvel, your Star Wars.
Right.
Like, you know, you might want to play those to really engage with like Luke Skywalker. Like,
yeah.
I love that character and I
and
just
I
want
to
like,
see him and yeah. I want to have a yeah. conversation
Things that
I
with
want to
my
try
character.
To seduce him.
But then in doing something like that, you know, you like you risk a non-canonical like conflict in that event mm-hmm. and you know, whether you're into that or not into that, same in like a Lord of the Rings thing, you know, there's
right changing like I don't know, maybe you guys try to kill Frodo and then like
yeah.
you actually get to.
Right. And that might not be what people want. If you're going to a licensed product for something like for your role playing experience, if you go to a licensed product like one of the Star Wars games and you choose to include the like canonical characters from the movies and canonical events and like incidents from the movies, but have your players like you know, have an interaction with them, you end up kind of, you either have to, you know, rewrite it and say, well, it's different. It's a different timeline. It's happening different because you guys are participating in it, or you're like handcuffed to, mm-hmm. You're handcuffed to what is established canon. You don't, you know, it might not be.
It makes a dilemma, a choice that you have to make. Mm-hmm. That it brings that up, right? And so we'll talk about that in a little second.
Yeah.
Want to hit the like original game settings, right? Like your cyberpunks, your Call of Cthulhu's, your Forbidden Lands, your Afterlives.
Afterlife. And Forbidden Lands also just distinguish. That's not Forgotten yes. Realms.
Correct.
Even though
they are very similar.
Yeah, they're
they sound
they you could mix them up so easily. Either in your head or just like in speech and say the wrong one. But Forbidden Lands is the like 80s fantasy grimdark hex crawler game that Enzo ran a couple sessions for us in.
So
ill-fated yeah. sessions. Yes. But that's a different one. That's different than D&D's Forgotten yeah. Realms.
So like in these like kind of smaller indie games, if you will, there's not a lot of canon. There's
yeah.
it's mostly just like the lore. It's, you know, you play, you know, it's a exciting setting and like there's something about the lore, whether it be like, you know, the tech level or the geography
right.
that probably grips you and so like you're wanting to explore these games, right? So you don't really have to worry about canon because like there's not 50 years of novels.
Right.
As you play, you create
you make
it.
Stuff.
Yeah,
you make your own canon.
Whereas if you were playing, you know, Lord of the Rings RPG, your characters might expect to meet Gandalf at some point, and if they don't, or if he behaves in a way, an un-Gandalf-like way, you know, your players are going to have some issues
or
likely
could.
With it. They could. They might not.
Maybe
they're into
like,
it. But,
fuck it, it's fun.
You know.
Like, how are your impressions?
Yeah.
And can you do all these characters well?
Yeah.
But that's kind of the, like, the difference in engaging with lore versus canon in a licensed product versus, you know, an original setting that was written to be a, you know, sandbox for play in the first place, not written to be a novel or a movie in the first place. Yeah. Create your own canon. In those ones. And that's more the focus, because there isn't any other canon.
Right, so when are these things helpful, right?
Yeah, how to use these things.
Because they're probably going to be there, right? We talked about in the beginning that it's basically impossible for there to be no lore, at least.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's because it's helpful, right? It gives players the basics. You know, what available player, you know, species are you? What kind of geography are you going to be dealing with? Like, are you guys, you know, in a desert or a swamp? Or maybe there's both. Maybe you could run into both.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, it's character creation. Like, where does your character come from? You know, all that stuff is lore that helps players make good characters.
Right. And then, when canon is helpful, is when, you know, it's just like the jumping off point. When, like, a canonical event is the beginning of the story somehow, right? And you use that as the jumping off point, however the characters may or may not interact with it.
Well, for example, in Enzo's Black Ash Company, he had like a questionnaire, or like a, you know, a prompt, the character yeah. creation prompt,
which we've extolled the virtues of before.
All the player characters had to have come into contact with extraplanar entities. Is that was one of the things, right, Enzo?
That we had some sort of connection to the.
Maybe.
It was,
I'm
like,
not
why?
Remembering it
I believe the exact question was like, why do you want to join the Black Ash Company? Parentheses,
right.
Like your character I, has.
Yeah, it was along those lines.
With some sort of guidance towards, like, well, why would we be engaged with this sort of cult activity
yeah.
and paranormal phenomenon versus, like, well, I'm a tough adventurer, man. I could be a caravan guard.
Right. Yeah.
Right, so it's. You know, something that in your adventure canonical, like the cult was bringing extra, you know, plane or specifically from the plane of fire.
Yeah.
But like, you know, my guy was a warlock. So he had a extraplanar patron.
The coolest D&D class.
And so that was kind of his, you know, entry in there. And then also, I forgot 100% of his backstory, but I think he made his warlock pack to fight a fire demon that destroyed his little homestead, I believe. Something like that.
Because you didn't like your patron,
well,
right?
My patron was kind of an asshole.
Yeah, and you had like made a deal with the devil for the
right.
strength to
yeah.
to like get your revenge quest, and then yeah, and then the quest was best served by joining this company that deals with this stuff.
Mm-hmm. So like in terms of lore and canon, right? The lore was I made a deal with a patron, right,
mm-hmm.
to get all my class abilities, and the canon was I didn't like that because these extraplanar entities are encroaching on Faerun, and like I'm gonna figure out how to beat them. So like that was my character's motivation. It's like
mm-hmm.
trying to stop it, right? Which makes a, you know, a good candidate for the Black Ash Company.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense why they're there.
Yeah. So summing it up, kind of when this stuff is helpful in your game is kind of at the beginning is when we're talking about it. So lore helps players understand the setting, have a picture in their head about like where and when they are, and then the canon is the sort of dynamic relationshipy stuff that you know, like how does your character feel about these things, what is their relationship to these things around them. You establish that, you know, these are the canon events in their life and this is how I feel about it, and then we move forward. And our general advice is,
yeah.
I think we move forward, but
yeah.
it can still be helpful later on, right? Like going to the library,
yeah.
for example.
Like
you know,
that.
That was
yeah, yeah. And
that
was a, you know, that was an opportunity to, which I was pretty excited about, but I know we weren't playing that often, so I knew we weren't going to get too into it. But I was really excited about the potential to engage with the lore of the Forgotten Realms when we went to the magic library, because there's all kinds of things we could have learned in character at the library setting that you could have just pulled from the
yeah.
you know, from the
that
from
was,
the multitude
and
of supporting
one,
documents.
I could speak to say and say that that was a moment of like, oh, I bit off a little bit more than I could chew as a DM, because yeah, going to a place like a library where it's just information,
a little bit risky. I could start asking about
and then
named
as
characters
the, yeah,
from
as
history
the
or something.
DM is like, oh, if you're looking for books, it's like, okay, that was fun as, you know, the DM, because it's like, now I get to just make up a bunch of book titles, but also I think I definitely just, well, I remember in that prep, I was trying to find, like, actual, you know, lore, yeah, like, you know, titles and books
that are canonical to the setting
that would work, and but then also having to provide just more lore to the players.
What was your thought process in doing that? Was it because you wanted to get it right, like, because, like, you know, give us something that was, like, you know, canon, I did it air quotes there for listeners at home, so, like, something that we could go look up on our own and find out more about it? Or was it more kind of just, like, it's already there and I should use it, so, like, it's going to make...
Would that have even been something you appreciated if I was like, hey, I'm going to look for this book, and then, like, that was the game, like, okay, well, in this session, then I came back and was like, hey, Gizzard read this book, and now I know this Wikipedia entry, essentially,
mm-hmm,
and kind of foist that on you to...
I personally wouldn't have minded. I think that's fun, and that's that specific session in the campaign was, I think, really fun because it was, you know, not just, it wasn't fighting, it was to play into the other side of the big mechanics of D&D and 5e, to where, yeah, you also have all these other, you know, attributes and skills, so let's use those, mm-hmm, in... I wanted to create, like, more than just, like, the fighting, because I don't think, you know, I don't think 5e is the best at... has the best combat system, but I think it does have a lot of other virtues, and it's, like, you know, interpersonal dynamics with characters and NPCs and interacting with the world in that sense, so... Yeah, going to the library was, I think, an interesting place to take the party to create and try to drive that, you know, looking for lore in the world, which was very fun, as well as, like, you know, with whatever the mission was there.
Okay.
And finding information.
If you were to do it over again, what would you do different?
Specifically
the library.
I think the library, I should have done just a lot more... I guess just research on the prep work to have, like, more stuff available, specifically, like, lore for the players to, like, add more to your guys' experience and understanding of playing in the Forgotten Realms setting.
I wonder if that tool exists. It's got to.
Like,
you know how in Skyrim there's a bunch of books you can pick up, and, you know, they're not books, they're a couple paragraphs, but they're like a book on screen that you page through. I wonder if anyone's put that together in a, like, accessible and easy to use format of just, like, here's a bunch of reading material for
setting. I know there's out there, because I've definitely, like, used some to, you know, create just book titles.
Mm. Are you talking about, like, it would be, like, maybe, like, a fandom page of, like, here are all the books, air quotes, in Forgotten Realms, and basically it's just snippets from, like, all the manuals?
Snippets from the manuals, but also, like, original fiction, little bits of poetry, whatever. And then, you know, you could print them, and they'd take up no more than half a page, and you could, like, hand them to your players and be like, oh, you read this book. You know, quote unquote.
Well, if it isn't already a thing,
that's a cool idea I just had.
That's a pretty fun idea.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of work, though. A lot of writing. And a lot of cut and pasting from the wikis and from PDFs of the books, whatever. Okay, so I would maybe say adding another point here to where it is helpful is, you know, when you do something like a library or, you know, a database, whatever, giving your characters an opportunity to, like, ask what they want, like going to a library,
mm-hmm,
to ask things about the lore, kind of whatever they want, with the caveat being, you know, you need to have that in your holster to give to them.
Yeah.
Because if they ask for it and you don't really have it ready, there's not a lot that comes from it.
But if you to bring that up do, on the fly.
Then that's a way that like lore and canon in a pen and paper game in a setting that's already pre-established can be very, very helpful to you, is when you give your players an opportunity to study or look for it, as long as you have it ready to give them.
Yeah, in a campaign where the players have an idea, because the way that specific one was run, where you guys picked kind of like from a mission board, and normally there'd be at least two or three.
Yeah.
And so, you know, prepping for multiple different, you know, day of adventures. But if there's just the one, it's like, hey, we're going to the library. Yeah, the DM would have a lot of time to also let the players know and be like, hey, we're going to the library. Help me help you. Like, what do you want to learn there? So you don't have to learn it yourself, and I can bring you the stuff on the actual, like, play day. That's a, yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah.
If you go...
Like, it's not terrific advice, because part of the advice is do a bunch of extra work.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Okay. All right, let's move on to talking about when the established lore and the canonical events of the whatever fictional setting you're playing on become a hindrance to your become a direct hindrance to your experience.
Well, let's just hit on that point that we just said and use as our segue. It can create a lot of extra work when you're trying to fit everything in to the puzzle pieces that have already been made. Right? That's kind of what we were getting at at the end of the...
Choosing to engage with it as a game master, having players who want to engage with it, or creating a situation where they have the opportunity to, you know, straight up ask questions in character that are going to give them lore answers, it creates extra work that maybe you didn't have to do.
Yeah. And maybe you don't have to do. You shouldn't feel any pressure to, like, deliver the correct answer, right? Because the canon can be different in your game. Like, we're playing different timelines or whatever. We used that phrase earlier in the episode.
Yeah.
So, like, it doesn't need to fit in perfectly. It can if you want.
Yeah.
That's going to be some work, though. You know, a lot of extra research and, you know, participation.
So it's also hard to, in that sense, to, like, especially for the DM, for the players, to predict what they're going to, you know, ask about, especially if it's like lorely, like, you know, you could do a bunch of research and like prep work,
and then they ask a question that you didn't prep for,
and you're like, ah, well,
yeah,
that now, and now you're just,
well, you know, I have an answer to a different question. Yeah. Would you like
I've got this note card.
This is a pretty good note. Spent a lot of time getting this together.
So that first answer is kind of a soft answer. The answer is, you know, when it becomes a hindrance is when you're doing too much. But that's a different answer for everybody.
Yeah.
How much are you willing to engage with? How much is going to be engaging to your players? Those are sliding scales. But, you know, as soon as that tips into doing too much, it's a hindrance.
Right. Like, I mean, I definitely, in the Forgotten Realms, I was running a one-shot. And I'm doing, like, I hit, like, the three-hour mark of prep. And I'm like, I'm not doing more prep than game time. No fucking way.
Yeah.
So I just stopped. And I said, I'll make it up.
That's another little aside. It might be an interesting episode because the answer's not simple, kind of like this. It's a personal preference thing. Like, when does it become a problem for you? Or, you know, when does it become a hindrance for you personally? But that ratio of prep to play time is maybe an interesting thing to get into in another episode.
Well, it took me an hour to write.
I thought it would take an hour to read. And I guess that's kind of the trick is, you know, how do you prep quickly stuff that will take longer? Yeah, how do you prep efficiently?
Because that's also kind of what, like, the fucking lore and canon is there for.
It's meant to save you time and prep.
Your thing. Otherwise, and like, and so, okay, I guess, pull that back just a teeny bit. It's also there as, like, a helpful thing for people who are not...
yeah, it's a tool for the players creative. As well. And they're like, oh, I don't know. Well, I mean, you could just be this guy. Yeah. Or, you know, look at this forest. This is a cool forest. Yeah. Read about this, a character from there.
But for the most part, it's there to ease the creation of a fun world because it's already made for you. You don't have to think of everything on the fly.
Yeah.
You don't have to improvise everything. It's there. There's a, you know, there's a already written answer.
Right.
So when it stops being that, it's too much, and that's going to be different for everybody.
Right.
At that point. Players.
Okay.
So, like...
when it becomes a hindrance for players.
We thought of this as... although, like, I can't think of an example, a real-life example, but, you know, we made up a guy in our head, a game master in our head that did this. So, like, it can be a hindrance for players when the game master expects the players to know the lore or the canon mm-hmm. that they're getting at, and then, like, you know, the players don't, and they're like, well, you guys get ambushed and all... you know, party wiped because you didn't see it coming because obviously this guy was going to betray you because, yeah. like, his name is Lando...
Carizian.
Yeah. I was trying to think of a pun, but I couldn't.
Lando so, betray you.
Yeah, whenever something the players don't know and couldn't reasonably be expected to know suddenly has a bearing on what's happening then. Suddenly affects their decision-making, that is... that's bad. That's a hindrance. That's, you know, you've goofed as a game master if suddenly the players are, well, like, hang on, now I've, like, now you're telling me this information? Was there any way I could have known this before? Oh.
All right. Oh, well, I didn't read the book?
That
Fuck,
changes
me.
My, that would change my decision making in this,
yeah.
in this instance. You know, gotcha-ing your players.
Yeah, and also it's not, like, you can definitely gotcha your players in a good way.
Yeah.
In a, you know, a fun, you know, fair play way. But we just thought that you could definitely use your leverage as game master of, like, you know, I've read all the books.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm going to use this against you.
Especially in one of the, in like, a licensed one. If you're playing, like, a Lord of the Rings adventure or a Star Wars adventure, and you're fucking way into it, and you're like, oh, well, you didn't know that about this planet?
You've read the 4chan about it and
yeah.
everything?
You didn't know that about this planet? Well, anyone in this universe would know this about the planet. Well, like, you
I
need to
I thought it was
tell...
weird that you didn't take, like, the mission-crucial item from the item list.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, then how are they?
Don't
supposed,
you know?
Did you put
that's
a star
how you
next
get
a.
That's how you get around on this planet. Is you wear? It's underwater. You need to wear a breathy thing.
Yeah.
You guys didn't take breathy things.
I put them on the list.
Yeah. We're like, okay.
Well, you didn't tell me I would need that.
I think the moments where it's a fair gotcha, you know, for the GM to the players is specifically, not only to like 5e, but other settings. It's Afterlife. It's just how you make monsters. But like, you know. It's heavy in 5e where, like, oh, players aren't supposed to read the monster manual, really. So that when you meet a monster, you have to figure out how to, like, kill it.
Yeah.
That's, like, a fun
yeah.
piece of, you know, or mechanical gameplay to where the players don't know how to beat everything.
Right.
Like, oh, you didn't know that, oh, you figured out during the fight that, you know, you should burn trolls so that they
don't regenerate.
Or
yeah.
this dragon is... you know, immune to this because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are, I think, times where it's okay for the players to not know.
And if everyone's playing fair, this isn't going to be a problem. And yeah, if everyone's yeah. playing in good faith, because then, you know, you ask your game master, like, hey, would my character know mm-hmm. anything about this? And then the game master will be like, give me some sort of lore, you know, survival, history, religion check. And if you pass it, they'll... share some information with you and be like, yeah, it's reasonable that your player, your character would know this based on, you know, whatever. And maybe they did know it, but they forgot it. Whatever. But then all of that is happening, like, in gameplay and in character versus, like, oh, fuck, well, we didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. From experience, players forget so much all the time, and need to be reminded. Especially when it's, you know, life-threatening to their character.
Which is why I think the best version of this is, you know, to not expect your players to memorize anything.
Right.
Just
That's a good thing. So don't expect them to memorize, like, if you give a lore dump.
Yeah.
Like, before you even start the adventure.
Hopefully they take some notes, cool.
Sure.
But don't expect them to fucking lock that away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In their frontal cortex, it's always acceptable for them to be like, wait, hang on, what does my guy know about this?
Yeah.
And if it's something that they don't necessarily know about, then you can, you know, request a role, but have all that being done in character.
Oh, I told you this in the intro, and if you don't remember it, it's tough. Mm-hmm. No. Just be like, yeah.
Because I forgot, but my guy...
Your character knows this.
My mini on the table, my character sheet... This guy, he probably remembers because it has tremendous bearing on his life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Even though it was months ago, how could I possibly remember? Your character probably does.
Yeah.
Right? So, no need to be a dick about that. I mean, another thing you can do to avoid, you know, this kind of gumming up is, like, the canon... can change, and so nothing is actually canon until it happens in your game.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're playing, like, Alliance's product, like, I don't know, Luke Skywalker doesn't, like, meet Yoda until he actually does in the game.
Until
so, like,
he
you guys,
does.
Like, team up with Luke Skywalker and go to Dagobah, that might go way different than how it does in the movie, and that is fine.
Yeah, so if you're there, then, like, it's not. It's not canon anymore.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, whatever happened in the movie, not canon, you're changing it. And, yeah, nothing is canon now until it happens. Until you guys, you know, act and make it happen. You can't be like, oh, it's Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not.
Like,
maybe that's just a creepy little frog in the swamp.
Right.
And the Jedi Master he meets is actually somebody completely different.
Right.
Because,
or,
you know, you're doing a new thing.
Maybe your original characters convince Luke not to go to Dagobah.
Mm-hmm. And the story goes differently.
You know,
and then
that's
concept of every canonical interaction that he has with Yoda
that is made up somewhere else.
It,
like,
doesn't,
you know,
happen until it happens.
It probably will happen, but it just doesn't happen there like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it doesn't restrict the players. Like, the players don't have to go to Dagobah.
Yeah.
They can go do something else that catches their interest or, like, that they think is more important, and that's fine.
So
it's kind of like a pick and choose.
Yeah.
Right? Like, as a game master, creating a world, especially with something in a licensed product or, you know, Forgotten Realms where there's a shitload of, you know, novels out there, you read something that you think is cool, engage with it. Sure. Yes. Absolutely. But don't feel forced to.
Yeah.
Right. You still, for me at least, in that, when I was running that specific campaign, I still held on to the idea of, like, I'm in control. Like, whatever I want to give the players, and if they say this happens, like, well, actually, no, not here.
Yeah.
Like, it's still the DM's, you know, prerogative to make whatever they want, you know, canon.
Mm-hmm. But also, be conscious of, like, expectations, because role-playing
is
extremely referential, right?
Yes, yeah. If
you
people
know,
want to engage with, like,
if
the
they want to meet Gandalf,
specific setting, it's like, all right, if that's what they want to do as the DM, I'm going to write that in, and that's what's, you know, you'll create the moment for them to do that, and then whatever happens in that is now roleplay, but, yeah, providing the experience that is expected is
right, which is
very
why
important.
It's on the board, it's always been on the board, Communication.
Yeah. That's like the main first thing on the board. It's right in the center of the word cloud of any of the advice that we ever give. Because you got to tell your players, like, hey, some stuff that I understand you may know, especially if you're playing like a licensed product or something everyone's super familiar with. And it extends beyond licensed products. It extends to, you know, original role-playing settings. They still, they might know a ton about Cyberpunk. They might know everything about, you know, Johnny Silverhand and all the stuff that led up to, you know, whatever, the events of the game 77. Mm-hmm. And you're playing in the past of that, and, you know, like, have a quick conversation ahead of time. Listen, none of that has happened yet, so maybe none of it will. Mm. We're here.
But also on the
or
other
we
side,
also as, might not touch it.
As a player, it's like, I really would like to engage with this.
Yeah.
Game Master, please.
And if I'm getting that feedback, and I'm like, okay, then we're going to.
Mm-hmm.
But now I know.
Yeah.
And then, I guess, I mean, we kind of already said this, but this, you know, you can choose, you can choose not to engage with canon at all. You know, obviously, as a Game Master, you're the god of everything that happens, but your players expect, you know, fairness in the form of consistency. And also just, like, not to be duped or...
Mm-hmm.
You know, unfairly swindled out of an experience because you both expected different things.
Yeah.
That's really, you know, I'm boiling down a few of our points, but we've talked about a lot of this. That's really it. Communication. Your players might expect something, you might be planning something, you know, without giving it all away. Have just conversations about your expectations when you begin something like that.
Yeah.
All right. Any closing thoughts on lore and canon?
Say, I guess, so we've never done anything like this. When we first worked on, when we first worked up the RPG Lite system, which we've recently revamped. There's a new version on the website. Hey, we'll talk about the website later. One thing we talked about was how, you know, that fit with basically anything, with no, you know, no modulating really necessary. Uh-huh. It was just like a basic framework for imagination, so you can do role play like in the car or, you know, while you're waiting for a party to start and folks are just sitting around, whatever. We talked about how, you know, you could do a Halo adventure or you could do a Star Wars adventure, whatever. Like, you could really easily do it in a licensed, I mean, unlicensed in this case, but, you know, you could use it to play and pretend in an established setting and use the established setting as, for the sake of,
right,
for the sake of ease of access, ease of entry for this quick little, like, hour adventure. We've barely used it for that. As far as I can remember. You know, have
yeah.
we ever done, like, a Halo or a Lord of the Rings adventure? And like, we're always making up just something
new
pretty much each time.
Yeah. I think that speaks mostly to us, though, because, I mean, we made a whole fucking... rule book.
Yeah,
we like right?
making stuff up. We like
so,
coming up with new stuff.
And, you know, no offense to everybody else who's listening, because only people who are listening are our friends. y'all never come to us with, like, hey, can we rip an RPG light? It's always like, hey, I got an idea for a one-shot. And then we kind of futz around with what system, and it all works out fine. But
yeah, it's never been bad.
But, you know, we really don't run enough RPG lights, Leela.
Yeah. Little one-shots in wherever. But, I don't know. That's something I've thought of because, like, I've always kind of had an idea that it'd be cool to play, like, a Lord of the Rings adventure. To just, like, completely lean into something that already existed. And, you know, use a simple system that we all already know, but to engage with something like that, and we've just never done it.
I feel like I did actually do one of, was it Halo? I might have actually done a Halo one. I can't remember. It was at the distillery years ago.
If you did, I don't think I was there, but maybe.
It could have just been Nico and Enzo and I.
Yeah.
But
yeah, something, you know, some stuff like that I thought was kind of cool. Anyway, just an observation. We created something a while ago that would be pretty well suited for that, especially in like short, casual one-shots.
Mm-hmm.
And we've barely used it for that. But that's because we also have another impetus, which is we like to make up new stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, Enzo, you want to recap us? Quick little recap?
Ooh, pew, pew, pew. I wasn't taking notes, so...
That's all right, we wrote everything down.
I can do it. It's fine.
You do it.
Don't give me homework.
So, we defined what we thought of as lore versus canon. Lore being historical and static. Canon being detailed and dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the catalyst for this episode. Enzo was running a 5e Dungeons & Dragons and was getting spray drinking out of a fire hose, if you will, with all the lore and canon.
A lot of forbidden or just forgotten realms.
Sucking information smoke.
Coming right at you.
Firefighter reference.
Probably. I don't know. I've never firefighted.
We talked about just like the examples of where you would run into like lore and canon, or lore or just canon or whatever, right? You know, we have your Forgotten Realms, which has lore and canon specifically designed for role-playing games. Then we have like licensed products, which are novels or movies or just other stories that have been adapted to role-playing games. And so the lore and canon interact differently in those.
Yeah.
We talked about when they can be helpful, right? Like it gives players the basics, a jumping off point for their character, gives the game master stuff to pull from, so like they're not doing all the work. They don't have to make up a whole new world. They take stuff from the world that's already made up.
Yep.
But that can also be a hindrance, because what do you choose? How do you fit it in? You know, these are questions that sometimes we ask ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that is kind of just, you know, pick and choose. Don't use it as a weapon on either side.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, in the end, communication goes a long way. So like players communicating with their game master, I would like to engage with this part of the lore or the canon. And the game master being like, okay, we're not going to do this part or this part. You know, really picking and choosing and being deliberate, instead of kind of like trying to include it all and making it all fit, right? That's a lot of work. Don't have to do it.
Yeah. You said something just there that gave me a quick idea before we wrap this episode up. So you said not to use it as a weapon.
Yeah.
One, I mean, I like that terminology. I don't like the idea of game masters being...
weaponizing lore?
Yeah, and I don't like the idea of like players and game masters being antagonistic toward each other. That sort of like 70s era,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, well, I've built this, you know, impossible dungeon, and if you don't play so tactically, if you don't remember how to do everything, I'm going to kill my players. I've never liked that idea. So, you know, the term, like, you know, don't weaponize it against your players, really good. Don't weaponize it in general, because that's you know, malevolent and mean. So, you know, don't do that. But if I was a game master doing something like this, and a player came at me with some lore, and was like, "Hey, it makes total sense that my character would know this, and you know, here it is," and gives me the note card. Caveat being, we have to be playing in an established setting where, you know, certain lore elements are just given to be true. And they were like, here's this lore thing. It affects my character. It also affects the campaign. I might be pretty into that. Kind of the way Torg has those drama cards where you could you know, you could put something on your game. You could, like, play a card on the Game Master and be like, mm-hmm. I know a secret way out. And now it's on the Game Master to figure out a way to work that into the session. Totally acceptable for that to just be the end of the session while the Game Master's like, all right, you got it.
We gotta do a whole episode about
board cards. We gotta get back to that. And that's the end of this little aside, is at some point we gotta address that idea because it's really cool. Okay. Thank you, Enzo, for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
And thank you, everyone listening at home or in your car or in the bathroom, wherever you enjoy your podcasts, for joining us for this episode of Two Headed Game Master. If you like our stuff, head on over to 2hgm.com. What's going on there?
Well, you're going to see Afterlife Bumper. Afterlife, our original setting and game system, is available now at drivethroughrpg.com mm-hmm. in digital or print form.
Yes.
If you buy the print, you also get the digital, so why would you not buy the print? It's got a lot of cool art.
And also, we're not stingy about it. Buy the printed one for yourself, Game Master, and then share the PDF with all your players.
Boom.
So that they have the material. We don't care how many people you share it with. Just check it out.
You'll also see some other stuff on there. We recently updated RPG Lite. It's got some more streamlined rules, stuff that we've been thinking and, you know, doing.
We're better game designers now, I think.
Yes.
RPG Lite 2.
RPG Lite 2. Also, Patreon. Join us, or become a patron. You can join us on the 2HGM Discord, where we chat and do, like, live events. So, you know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Join us there.
Enzo, you got anything you want to plug? Any recommendations? Before, you got something coming up.
I don't know when this episode gets posted.
They can still donate.
Well.
Or can they?
Oh, to the
By the time this episode comes out, I think you will be back.
And I think the people who listen to it either already have or... I'm not going to.
You know, don't exclude the whole wide world of podcast listeners.
We could always bump this one up in the,
yeah,
in the release order.
That's true,
this
we could.
Always
well, no,
next week.
No real plug. I'll be leaving for a motorcycle trip in Morocco at the end of this week.
Okay, they don't have to donate to you. Just plug the charity that you're...
anyone listening wants to, Cool Earth is a charity that provides knowledge and money to indigenous people of the rainforest and projects down there to help with sustainability and to combat the climate change that exists.
Climate change.
It definitely exists, people.
If you don't believe it,
just
well,
get
don't
wrecked.
Know why you're listening to this.
Okay, hang on, because, you know, you didn't come prepared, but also you didn't know we were going to spring this on you. Okay, so it's coolearth.org.
Yes. Coolearth.org.
Link
cool
in chair. Bio.
Yeah.
Along with my pussy.
Suck it.
Other links in bio. All right. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pondilla's Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And we'll see y'all next time.
See you next time.
Bye.